irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohlig, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Flying by the seat of my pants.
Good gift for you would be a watch. What's the deal? What's the deal?
One.
You know you don't.
I have one on my phone.
If you have one, it doesn't work.
No, what I can never anticipate is the traffic that's coming here.
Because you live 9 feet away.
Well.
And I live in Tarzana, and yet I manage to
Yes, you do. Well.
I was just speaking to our two lovely guests who have collectively pumped the attractiveness of this entire
they
room
have,
much
they?
Higher than
that's
it normally is with just you and I here. And we were just talking about how there's two types of people in the world. There's people that, you know, scramble.
Yeah.
You know, like airport people, like my brother is. And then there are us sedate, peaceful types who go and are just zen-like. And because you know
really?
How zen I am.
Oh,
Michael.
I know. Yes.
You know how
yeah, like
completely non-high-strung I am. It doesn't work for me. I should be.
I know. And you know, God knows I try to leave early, but today there were, you know, other things. I have other things going
You're
on.
Fuddled. You're fuddled.
However...
Yes.
We're here, right?
We are.
We're
we
here.
Are.
So, first of all, let's thank our sponsor. Please.
Let's do that, shall
we'd like
we?
To thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. And to learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
Yes, we are. But before we go any further,
yes.
Paul, I want to know, you know, we go a week. We don't see one another. We have an occasional little phone call.
Yes.
How was your week?
It was good. It was good.
What'd you,
you
do?
Doing
I know you're busy. You're
doing the Poppins of Mary.
Mary
Poppins,
Poppins
out of Cabrillo Music Theater. It's very, it's been a lot of fun. We're having a great time with that. We have posted a couple of things on the Cabrillo website. And next week, we actually have Juliana Hanson and Wesley Alfin.
Yes,
Juliana
I'm looking forward
is
to that.
Mary Poppins. Wesley Alfin is Bert. And we will have them on to talk about all things Mary Poppins.
And this is your return to the musical theater stage after
yes.
quite a long absence.
After longer than a reasonable man would consider prudent. 25 years.
25
yeah,
years.
25 years. Back to the musical. And I'm reminded of that whenever I stand between two dancers whose collective age is not mine. And I'm just there and
right.
they're dancing and I'm just like, Christ, I hope they know CPR. That's going to be bad.
I saw a video on the Cabrillo Music Theater website that was covering some of the rehearsals. Were you in that video?
Yes, I was.
If you look
in the back, you'll see an arthritic man having a seizure.
Oh.
And that would be me.
Okay.
That'll be me.
I'll have to take a
no,
second look at
there,
that.
There's not, I don't do a lot of dancing yet. I do a lot of offstage singing. I don't do a lot of dancing. But I had to learn all the supercalifragilistic letters.
And boy, is that tough, because that's
yeah.
a spectacular thing in
34
the show.
34 letters, and every letter has a pose, and then you learn them. And then you speed it up, and you speed it up, and you speed it up, and it's... but that was
well, you're lucky you didn't have to learn it backwards, right?
Yes, that's right, because you know
it
backwards. So supercalifragilisticexpialidocious backwards is...
Docious aliexpialidocious.
You really need a hobby.
Yeah.
You got too much free time, Michael.
What can I say?
How was your week? How was that?
You know what? It was pretty darn good. Great stuff at the club this weekend. Sandy Bainham.
Yes.
From Broadway.
Who's been at your club a couple of times.
Yes, and the CD release of her new album, which called It Might Be Fun, which is an album collectively of Bruce Kimmel music.
Right.
You know Bruce
oh, yes,
Kimmel.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
And he's
Bruce.
Been writing since he was 15 years old.
Oh,
this
wow.
is a gentleman who is one of our directors and record label producers.
And the man knows
Richard
his donuts.
Yes,
knows
he does.
His donuts.
Yes, he does.
Yes.
Likes those donuts, too.
Yeah.
And
we talked donuts the last time he was on the show. That's it. So I should inform you guys of that. It wasn't just an errant thought I had.
So. She did a kick-ass job with a kick-ass band, I might add, five pieces behind her. And she just came from the closing of a six-week run in a musical that she was in called Inside Out,
yes.
written by Doug Haverty
yes.
and Adrian Russ. wonderful, wonderful show that was revived on its 20th anniversary. So there was that, and then I went and reviewed Tiger by the Tail because of Michael Taylor Gray being in our studio last week, and I must say, what a wonderful show at the Group Repertory Theater in North Hollywood.
I love the premise of that.
Michael does an amazing job as the star of this show, playing a psychiatrist, writing, answering an ad for someone, kind of a personal ad, may I say. Yeah. Didn't really know what he was answering, but it was from a prisoner. And they develop a relationship, and that's all I'm going to say, because you really have to go and see it. Beautifully directed, stage, sets, great. The piece, Jules Aaron directed it. Wow. And the piece just stands by itself. It's one of the great, new pieces of theater here. Yeah. So,
and he was a joy to have on the show. Just
yes,
a
he was.
Person.
Indeed, he was.
I really enjoyed having.
And speaking of joy, you know that we have another great show today, Paul, because we not only have one, but we have both of the stars of Carrie the Musical, which is being billed as an all-new, reimagined, immersive, developmental production aimed toward becoming a major production to play throughout the country, with sights also set on the rest of the world.
Born out of its previous incarnation as an off-Broadway show in 2012, preceded by a Broadway production in 2008, this new production, set forth under the guidance of Tony Award-winning producers Bruce Robert Harris and Jack W. Batman, working closely with the La Mirada Theater for the Performing Arts, who spoke to about Seussical just a couple of weeks ago with the lovely Kathy Rigby.
Well, her company does the shows there.
Right,
this is not a.
This is just at that location.
Exactly.
Yeah. But they seem like nice people nonetheless.
Super nice.
And they're producing artistic director Brian Kite. The show is directed by the always inventive Brady Schwind. Did I get that right?
I hope so.
With choreography by Imera Gwyn.
Nope. It's Gwyn. Lee Martino.
Oh, choreographer by Lee Martino.
That was a lot, yeah.
Oh, okay. So that's changed.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we love you, Lee. Sorry about that.
It's okay. Lee Martino. See, I said it three times.
And she's gorgeous and lovely and so talented.
And a revised book by Lawrence D. Cohen. Is that correct? Okay.
Yes,
Lawrence D. Cohen. And the score by the Academy Award-winning composers Dean Pitchford and Michael Gore. If I remember correctly, Michael Gore is the Fame guy, right?
He is. And right? Brother of Leslie Gore.
And so is Dean. Dean and he both. Didn't they both do that?
Well, they were both.
Maybe I could be wrong,
but
I think I'm correct.
Oh,
yeah.
You are so right.
Sorry.
Lived
I
on
had
that
to chime
album.
In.
Lived on. Oh, no, that's why you're here. That's why you're here.
At least it wasn't Flashdance.
The Fame album?
I could see
what, or me?
Doing that famous water scene in Flashdance.
You really go to dark places.
I do.
You really do.
Of course, as bumpy as the ride has been for Carrie, from New York to Los Angeles, it all started with the success of the 1976 motion picture starring Piper Laurie and
Sissy Spacek. They're all going to laugh at you. That's my Piper Laurie impersonation. They're all going to laugh at you and your dirty pillows.
That's spot on.
You're pretty close, huh?
That is really good.
To this day, I'll call my sister and I'll just leave because I'll just call her up and that will be the message I get.
We're
all going to laugh at you. Your dirty pillows.
You sound like Mickey Mouse.
A Piper Laurie on helium.
Right.
Because she's all charged up on that. Anyway, sorry, Michael.
No. I was just saying I had the pleasure of meeting her actually at Sterling's upstairs at the Federal when she came in for a show. What a lovely
Piper
woman,
Laurie?
Actually. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Hustler, are you kidding? Phenomenal.
Oh, so many things, right? So let me back to this. Starring Piper Laurie and Sissy Spacek, which in turn was based on the 1974 novel of the same name, that novel being the first ever published book written by the now fiercely successful Stephen King.
Stephen King, yes.
So without further ado, let's say hello to the stars of Carrie the Musical at the La Mirada Theater for the Performing Arts. Now on stage through April 19th, welcome the lovely and talented Misty Cotton and Emily Lopez.
Ladies, is it through April 19th?
No. April 5th.
April 5th.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. Yeah.
Get your tickets now.
Boy.
Well, it's through April 5th, but then from April 5th to April 19th, it's all with Lee Martino. So that's the way we're doing that.
I'm so sorry.
No, but it's April 5th. It's an urgency because if it's only through April 5th, see it while you can.
That's right.
Because, all right, so one of the things I want to say that I'm very, very excited about is Carrie holds a special place in my mind and my heart because it was the first R-rated movie I ever saw. And I don't know if that's good or bad because it's really, the movie is really off-putting. It's like you look at it now and you think about what, because that period of time, and I'm going to start with you guys, see if you agree with me, but if you look at like the television movies of that time, Carrie almost seemed like a heightened version of those really get under your skin, let's scare Jessica to death. Those the Changeling, great movie with George C. Scott. There was a creepiness that existed through like the 70s and into the early 80s, and then they went to slasher, and then horror movies didn't really have the psychological kick that I think they had at that time. We'll start with you, Misty. Do you find that to be the case?
Oh, certainly.
Just going to the film?
Yep.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Psychological, just like, I mean, you go back to like Psycho and all those things. I think those are scarier than the slasher.
Oh, far more.
You know,
far
things.
More.
So, yeah, absolutely.
So now how does this, for our listeners who might not be familiar, without giving away too much, aside from the fact that it's a musical, does it follow pretty much the same narrative as the film?
Yes and no. It definitely has its own. There's things that are not in the book or story things that are not in the book or in the movie that are in there. Like my character, for instance, gets sort of more fleshed out,
right.
Gets a little bit more. What's the word? I don't know. There's just more intimate things where you get inside and you can see why I'm the way I am. Possibly,
okay, a little
that
more
you may not
right.
see in the movie.
Right.
And, of course, your character is the mother, Margaret.
Right.
Right. Right. Yeah, because, I mean, even we joked about it earlier, but as great as she was, you know, there was not a whole lot of depth to Carrie's mother in the film because she was just sort of, you know, the religious zealot and sort of gone over the top type. Not that she wasn't, you know, phenomenal as that, but it's nice. That's nice to hear that you. So we get to know her a little more.
Yeah, and they also, from what I'm to understand, in the 2012 version, which was different from the 1988 version that they originally did, was they really focused on the bullying aspect. There's a lot of heart in this show.
Did you say 1988?
88 was the first. It opened on Broadway with Betty Buckley and Lindsay Hatley.
Oh, really?
That was the first.
Right.
First one, and. They rewrote it with a different point of view. And the show really, really does have heart. So many people come out surprised that they're moved.
Right. I think that is the assumption is I think expecting like heightened camp, and that's not the case at all.
No.
Yeah. And I think could that have been? I mean. Did you see or have you read the original incarnations of it, like the 88, or is it completely transformed from that, or is it just a tonal change? Is it a textual change? Or there?
I honestly have never seen the 88 version all the way through. I've seen clips of different things, so I can't tell you how much it's changed. I believe it has changed a lot. I think they added like 7 new songs. Do you know about that, Emily?
Yeah, I'm not sure how many of the songs are new, but all the arrangements are different.
Yeah.
It's definitely...
And they've, you know, taken certain songs out, added different songs. So I can't really speak on that since I've never seen the production in full. I know there's some copies out there.
Right.
And I think they really decided to focus on the bullying aspect in 2012. So I do think it's a lot different.
Yeah,
and also, you know, I mean, when you look at it, the tone is different. The choreography, there was a whole lot of choreography in the original one. And not that there's not in this one. It's just there seemed to be a lot of choreography in everything in the original one and everything. So I don't know. So definitely it is tonally different. The mother-daughter stuff was always really lovely. Not that the other stuff wasn't. It's just that was always very solid and people fell in love with the music.
And, now, Mr. Pitchford and Mr. Gore involved from the very, very beginning?
Of this product? Oh, in 88? You know, from what I understand, yes, I believe they were, but I think, and Brady, our director, would be able to answer this better. I think that, you know, just like anything, when you hand it over to a director or you hand it over to certain people, your vision may not be what you expect it. Right. And I don't know. I had heard maybe that might have been the case. I really don't know enough about it to speak on that. But I know that they were involved, of course.
I love to hear about that. I love the stories of shows like this because it just shows that there's – there's so much there that works that sometimes it's just the tenacity of taking it that gets it to the place where it really hits the audience that it's supposed to hit. And a lot of times people come in and they talk about, you know, workshopping productions and how much they morph and how much they change. But this is really a great example of something that is just really sustained. And in terms of it going to New York and not doing well in New York, that holds no water for me, because there's just such a natural bitchiness for new projects in New York City that it a lot of times it just has to like cut its teeth outside of that judgment and then be able to exist on its own, rather than, oh, like, here's a musical of the movie. Let's look at it as the musical that it is, mm-hmm. rather than, oh, they just took the movie and they threw it on stage and they added songs. It's not. It's a completely different thing. Right. Mm-hmm. And it sounds right. like a completely yeah. different thing.
Well, I think also one of the reasons, too, they probably were so had so much tenacity about keeping it going in some sort of form and arriving here with what they're doing here in Los Angeles is because it has such a following, the cult following on it alone. Mm-hmm. You know, they were just waiting for this thing to come up each time, and each time it did, but I think they were loyal and kept going back, right?
As
you're probably seeing and experiencing that now with your audiences, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. People who've been wanting to see it. This is the West Coast premiere of this. You know, I mean, Carrie, since when it was originally done in 88, they didn't touch it. It wasn't licensed. You couldn't license it until they decided to, you know, take Carrie out again and really treat it kindly and go for it in 2012, which they did a lovely job in doing that. And it's kind of that, and we are on, our show is based on the 2012 version.
Okay. You know, it's one of the questions that we always ask. It's a bit trite, and I'm not going to ask it for just that reason. But when you have things like this where you talked about the cult following, Michael, but also the fact that these characters, that this film is so iconic, the Sissy Spacek role, the Piper Laurie role, the breakout, the first feature film role for Travolta. Is it Karen Allen? Nancy Allen?
Nancy
Allen also in it.
Yeah,
yeah. Breakout role for her too. The girlfriend of Travolta.
I think it's Nancy Allen.
But it's one of these things where it doesn't sound like, you know, we always talk, oh, how do you make the role your own? How do you make the role your own? There's really no danger of blindly parroting that, because this sounds like such just distinctly different characters. I mean, and especially given the relationship that the two of you that you said has more depth to it. So, was that must have been nice for you as a performer to just really not have any of that residue of existing portrayals to have in your head at all, because the piece was so different.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, the scenes that you see in the movie are mostly musicalized. I have very little, I mean, we'll have little dialogue things, but in general, it's all song. So it's very, very different.
Right.
So yeah, it is liberating. And, you know, I mean,
I love that photograph that
is being used of you
and yourself, Emily. You clutching, you know, the mother.
Oh, it's a great shot.
It is.
It's a great shot.
Such passion.
And
desperation.
The warmth of it. It almost looks like the lighting of it is such. It almost looks like there's a little, like you're seeing it in the reflection of a candle or a fire or something.
Right.
It has a real warm,
a
warm glow to it. But I don't mean warm like, oh, cozy warm.
Right.
I mean like, yeah.
Right.
But it's a great shot.
So
yeah.
We should talk, though, about the changes that have been made, and one of them significantly has been that this has become a very intimate show at La Mirada, which is a large theater, so they have not used the entire space of the theater, correct?
That is correct. It's their on-stage series, which we're on the stage, so we're not using the big seats. So, yeah, it's only about 250 seats, probably.
Oh, wow.
But they have many more performances than they would normally because of the change in the size. I think the La Mirada seats about 1,400 otherwise.
I believe so.
So, yeah, it's all, you're right. It's like an arena production.
Oh,
you're right in the action.
Yeah, some of the seats move. They move during the show to put you in different positions.
Really?
Not all of them, but some of them. Section A.
Section A. So people should request Section mm-hmm. A.
And is there, I understand there's a spill zone?
Well, that's what they say. Do you really get blood on people?
It depends on how much blood gets dropped on me, because sometimes I am just like doused and I'm, you know, throwing my hands around, you know, killing people in the prom, and it blood will just like fly on the audience members. There's nothing I could do about it. But maybe,
there's a
know.
Spill zone. So it's like Gallagher with blood.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If the watermelon
exactly
was full of blood. Yeah, it would be exactly like a Gallagher show. Oh, see, but that to me, just that, I would be so much more into that than the, just the standard theatrical removal of this on stage and this on. So you have to experience, both of you have to experience some upfront reactions that are just something that you would not get, given that what the usual separation is.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think a lot of this was Brian's idea, right? Your director?
Oh, Brady, yes.
Brady, I'm sorry.
Yes, oh,
Brady's
yeah. This is his concept, and he has some great...
He likes to put big things in different...
Different
settings.
Right. Yeah. This was definitely him. There's such great imagery in it, and he's done a wonderful job really creating pictures and mood and, yeah.
In both of your opinions, and that working on this this version of it, this on-stage series, do you think that this is the way to continue with it? If it were going to do a national tour or something like that, could you see it working better with this intimacy, or do you think it would work better? I mean, monetarily, from a producer's point of view, you're always like, get as many people in there as possible.
Yeah.
But as a performer, what do you think, Emily?
I think that this story is so over the top, but at the same time, the characters are so real and relatable that you want to be as close as you can to them to see the full range of what's going on in the story. I feel like this is the right way to tell the story. I'm not a producer, not a director, but for me personally, when I'm doing it,
no, but
feels
you do sort
like
of
I'm,
have a front row seat on reaction.
Yeah, it feels like you're there. You're in the high school and you're living the story. It makes it a lot easier for the actors to get into the zone because you're always in the world. Always, you're never really like off stage. You know, in the wings, you're just always in the high school.
Is it set in our current times?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, in terms of the bullying aspect of things, is it addressed like sort of internet bullying and that sort of thing?
A little bit, not too much. Brady had mentioned that he kind of wants it to be like right at the beginning, where the internet was not as big as it is now, but.
Right.
Kind of, you know, still had a presence, and
right.
So it's kind of the word 98 has been thrown around,
right?
So
right.
We're thinking,
but
like,
it's hard to theatricalize that because it's so removed.
Yeah,
it's not.
There's only like one line that I hear. I mean, she gets bullied, period, in high school, so you see that. But there's one line where she's like, "Oh my gosh, so and so just posted it already." Like, so there's a reference,
right? There's a nod,
Norma,
to it.
Whatever,
right.
Yeah.
There's an
mm-hmm.
odd to it, but it doesn't.
So, Misty, let me ask you something, because mm-hmm. we're going to talk to Emily at length after we do our arts calendar, which is coming up in just a couple minutes. With all the wonderful things you've done, you've been on Broadway, you've done national tours, you played Ellen in Miss Saigon, you were Eponine in Les Mis, you starred opposite Donny Osmond in Joseph. Where does this experience fit in your most favorite category?
Oh, it's starting to become one of my most favorite, because there's just, I've been racking my mind trying to think if there's any musical theater character written for a woman like this mm-hmm. at all. Can you guys think of any? I mean, I just can't. So the opportunity to be able to play something like this, a woman like this, is just a gift, and I absolutely love it. And it feels like, and it's been done by greats. I mean, you know, Betty Buckley, and then Maren Mazie did the off-Broadway one. And
because Betty Buckley did the mother role.
Yeah, she did the mother role. She, of course, did the gym teacher in the movie.
Teacher, yeah.
But she was the original mother in this show in '88. And to be able to do that, there's very few actresses that have done it. And to be able to take on a role like this is just amazing. So... I just absolutely love it.
It's just got to be a meatball. It's just got to tear
And you're never
into
distracted
that.
By the audience being that close?
I'm not. I actually block them out, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they kind of make you honest, if that makes sense, too. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Not that you wouldn't be if you were on a proscenium stage, but they're there. I mean, they're right up in it. They can, they'll know in a second if you're lying.
It becomes filmic. I did, for 2 years, I did the original Chicago production of Tony and Tina's Wedding, which obviously worlds a difference. But you talk about just when you're sitting across a table from someone and improvising or performing with someone who's having their dinner or whatever, there's no faking it. There's no separation. It becomes much like film acting
rather
than stage acting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Well,
let's do our arts calendar.
We're
going to
continue this
discussion.
We're going to talk to Emily.
Emily Lopez, who we'll be with in just one moment. The Three Penny Opera debuted in Berlin in 1928. Three Penny is nothing short of a groundbreaking work of what is now termed Brechtian theater, in which the full use of theatricality is on display and the fourth wall is broken. The audience is aware they are watching a play, a reaction to a previous, more naturalistic approaches to stage works. When first produced, the musical challenged the audience's notion of how songs could be used to tell a story, and the character's ostensible amorality was thought unworthy of expression in song. A Noise Within last produced the Three Penny Opera in 1997. An adaptation of The Beggar's Opera by John Gay, Three Penny is a forerunner of modern musical theater that follows the exploits of Macheath, Victorian London's most notorious criminal, surrounded by a stage full of rogues, foisting a radical new brand of theater with music. In America, Showboat would have just premiered, and Oklahoma would still be 15 years away on audiences. Three Penny was not just rebellious in form, but also in content, highlighting the failure of capitalism and celebrating socialism.
That's right, and the Three Penny Opera, if you are interested, ladies and gentlemen, is now on stage through May 7th. At the Distinguished A Noise Within Theater located in Pasadena, California. For tickets, call 626-356-3100 or visit anoisewithin.org.
I love Three Penny.
Yeah.
I did Three Penny.
Did you?
Yeah, I didn't do Macheath, though. I was one of his cronies.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's all about the translation, because there's also a phenomenal recording of What Keeps Mankind Alive by Tom Waits. Everyone should go online and look for that right now from Three Penny. What Keeps Mankind Alive? Tom Waits sings it. He does.
I know he's one of your favorites.
Better than anybody.
I like him.
Emily, how are you?
Emily Lopez.
Carrie White. Is it Carrie White?
Yeah, Carrie
White. It is Carrie White. Mm-hmm. So what did you? I just wrote a short film about bullying that did very well on the festival circuits called The Beating. Mm-hmm. That we were very, very lucky with. And in terms of your take on bullying, any personal experience from you yourself that you want to share, you don't have to share. I'm putting you on the spot.
It's okay.
But that's what radio's about.
Well, I was never really bullied. I always really kind of got along with everyone.
Yeah.
I didn't really care too much about school. I always just wanted to do theater, so it didn't really bother me that I wasn't popular, I wasn't, you know, anything. But when I was little, I was kind of a bully. Like, I was a very, like, angry little girl who was just, like, grumpy all the time and would, like, you know, pick on kids. So, like, I mean, not when I was, like, old enough to know better, really, but so I kind of have that perspective of, like, being just, like, so angry about everything that you just want to take it out on somebody that, you know, for no reason. So,
really?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow. It's fascinating because you do not seem, you seem like I made the Zen joke earlier, but you seem like about as far from an angry person as anyone I've ever met, however briefly that I've met you.
Yeah.
But isn't it amazing that we transform?
Yeah.
Isn't that just astonishing?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, Michael,
everything
about
around us.
What?
I mean, you know, the transformation is as a result. And she said you knew this about yourself when you were young, that you wanted to be in theater.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was your passion. But it was at 1999 when you made your debut, right, professionally?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. My professional debut,
She's doing air quotes.
No.
She's doing air quotes.
I have done so much community theater. I was raised on community theater. My professional debut, it was probably performance service. I did a Children of Eden when I was like 9 or 10.
Oh,
so
okay.
That would have been my first professional show. But just always done community theater my whole life. As soon as my mom would let me do it, as soon as I was old enough.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. No, that's so many of us.
It says that you debuted in Jane Eyre.
Oh, that was a community theater production of Jane Eyre.
1999.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Don't knock community theater. No. It's community theater. You know the first community theater production I did? Cats.
What?
Yeah. Get mm-hmm. out.
Yeah.
No. I would have.
Not cats like you know. It was spelled K-A-T-Z.
Oh, oh wow.
And it was about a deli. And we were all different luncheon meats. We each had our own songs.
Oh, Paul Struli.
Yes. Thank you. You like that?
I love that.
Here all week. Cats. Yes. Cats. And I would, yes. Magical matzah Mistopheles.
Anyway. So, Emily.
Sorry.
I was just saying. So, all the things that you've done in your career, of course, you have done Into the Woods, you play Cinderella, you've done Little Night Music, you've done Oklahoma playing Laurie, and I saw Mod Rock. Now, I don't know whether I saw you in it, if you had gone on that evening or not, but I saw that.
You never would have seen me in Mod Rock because I never went on.
You are a lucky person, perhaps.
Well, it was fun to be there because I love that style of music that was in the show.
The style of music was great.
It was a really cool cast, but I mean, I was an understudy. I was there maybe.
They put a lot of money into that show, too. A lot of advertising. The whole side of the building is still remaining. You know, the painting of the two stars that weren't even the stars of the show.
They paid in full for that one. That's not coming down for a while.
They did. Well, it's a great kind of a beacon to the NoHo Arts District area, being that's on the side of the El Portal Theater.
Yeah.
But I did see the show, and I enjoyed the music. Storyline was a little tough for me to swallow, but based on fashion, really based on the clothes of the mods versus the other. It was like
very dramatic
West Side
stuff.
Story, and it was all about the clothes. That's why, okay.
Isn't it all
Vest Side Story.
But you also...
Sorry.
You also left...
I'm tired.
You left performing for a couple of years, right?
No, just almost a couple of years. I left California. It's not that I left performing. It's that I just wasn't getting any jobs.
That's the old... The old Roddy Dangerfield line is, I left the business for a while, I quit. And to give you an idea how well I was doing when I quit, I was the only one who knew I quit.
So true. Yeah, but I was out here. I've lived out here my whole life. Right. And about a year ago, I had the opportunity to move to Burlington, Vermont. So I, wasn't doing anything out here. I didn't really have any reason to be out here anymore. So I just said, what can you lose? So.
And you're a songwriter. And,
And
a producer, too.
Yeah, I recorded a lot of my music when I was in Vermont and just did it myself. Had my friends help me figure out how to do it. And
is there a website for yourself where people can
find
out about that side of things?
I've just been sending it to any of my friends that care to actually hear it. I have a couple of songs on SoundCloud. So if you look at my name, Emily Lopez.
Emily Lopez, look it up on SoundCloud.
Yeah, there's a few on there.
Emily, did you know before the audition for Carrie, were you familiar with the work? Did you know the film?
Yeah, absolutely.
You did.
I knew the film.
Your eyes just went like,
Well, I'm a huge, I'm a musical theater nerd, so I know all about the original, I've watched the videos, anything I could find online.
Oh, so you knew about the musical?
The musical.
Okay.
The movie, everything. It's just such a great weird
tale.
Story, So I knew a lot about it, but I had seen it when they did it off Broadway too. His a friend of mine was in it. So
who was your friend in it?
Derek Klena.
Yeah.
Yes.
I know Derek too.
We all know Derek.
Everybody knows Derek.
He is sat in that very chair.
America's sweetheart, Derek Klena.
And he's got a big TV episodic thing coming on this week. This week?
Yeah, one of those like crime shows.
Like NCIS or something like that.
NCIS UV. I don't know.
SUV.
So you knew
all of this. You were already acquainted with this.
Mm-hmm.
And now, how was that? That can be good, or that could be a detriment when you're trying to create a role for yourself. Well, how did you find it to be?
Well, once I found out I was doing this production, this is so far. This what we're doing is so far removed from anything that's ever been done with Carrie before. So it didn't really feel like I could use anything that people had done before, because I have no problem like copying people.
At least initially. I find it with understudy roles especially. It's like first night out there, I'm doing what Phil does. And I'll make it my own by Sunday.
So, but this is so different and you really don't have any other option than to just like build it from the ground up because it's the script is a little different and, you know.
When did you pursue this on your own by sending in the two videos?
Well,
as an audition?
Yeah, I auditioned 2 years ago when they had their first like round of Carrie auditions when it wasn't at La Mirada yet. Mm. It was still kind of like searching for a home. And I had auditioned at the open call and got a call back from that, and it just never happened. So in that time, I had moved to Vermont, and my mom, as soon as I moved to Vermont, was trying to get me to move back and would send me, like, audition notices all the time. And
oh, mother. Yeah, she's crafty.
Yeah.
Subtle like a freight train there, Ma. Yeah.
She's great, you know, and she knows that this is what I want to do. So, ultimately, you know, she's always right. So, she sent me a message saying that they had posted another audition listing for Carrie again. And that I should, like, talk to the woman who was my agent out here when I was living here. And I thought, like, all right, I'll send an email so I can take a picture of the email and send it to my mom so she'll leave me alone. She can't say that I didn't try.
Right.
And so I signed into my email, and I already had an email from my agent, Tall Fox, saying, like, they're doing Carrie again. Do you want me to submit you? So
synchronicity.
Yeah. And I thought, well, you know, I live in Vermont. You know, what can I do? So they were willing to accept video submissions and just kind of totally worked out.
But, I mean, did they give you the job based on the video submissions or did you have to come here?
No, I had made one video where I sang Carrie's song, Carrie, and did all the scenes that they had sent to me. And I filmed that in my friend's basement. And it was very creepy and fun to do. And then they had called me, I think like a day and a half after, but they called me at like 10:30 at night and said, we need another video from you where you do the prom destruction song, but we need it by 9 a.m. tomorrow. So I thought, okay, well, I have 3 hours on you guys, so I'll just wake up super early tomorrow and try to find a place to do this. I didn't have a camera. I had my iPhone, and I just, like, put a prom dress in my purse and, like, walked around trying to think, where can I film
prom
this?
Dress in your purse?
Oh, my gosh.
They had asked me to put on something more, like, prom-like so they could see, you know, what I look like when I'm not wearing baggy clothes. And so I put in a prom dress and walked around, and I remember that there was this old high school gymnasium, like, right a couple of blocks away from where I was living that just basically sits empty most of the time.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so I thought, like, okay, I'm just, you know, it's early. No one's going to know that I'm in here. So I just went in and filmed it, you know, two times on my phone and then just, like, got out of there as fast as I could.
And you just sang it a cappella? You just...
I didn't have any, you know, there was no time for me to get any music, so I just had to do it a cappella and hope, just commit to it 100% and hope that it worked out, you know?
Oh, my God.
Well, that's kind of
that's
rough
amazing
to be asked
that
to
that
do that.
That would work out so well, because when I hang out in a prom dress in abandoned high school gymnasiums, they give me no end of shit about it. But yet here she gets a role. Why is that? It's a sexist industry, Michael. I've said it
before. It's your taller and a little more imposing.
Yeah, that's it. Oh, that! What a great tale, though, that is, about just the hitting that and the tenacity. And
it was worth it to me, you know, to just, like, have a good story, at least. If I didn't get the job, then at least I could say, well, you know, I was in a prom dress and I have a video of me in a prom dress
but
in a gym,
it's all about
my face off.
It's all about risks, though, and taking risk and going out there. You could have played it so safe. You could have stood up against a bare wall in your house and hang a sheet up for a backdrop and sing a song, and you didn't do that.
That's not exciting.
No, it's not. But there's a lot of people that just play, you know, especially in audition process, a lot of people just play it. We have a lot of performers that listen, especially a lot of young people, and I love for them to hear things like this because they know that, you know, better to take a big risk and fail than to play it safe and quasi succeed.
Absolutely. You know? Just do things for the story is my advice for everyone. Even if you don't get the job, if you get a good story out of it, then it's 100% worth it.
Are you totally spent by the end of this performance? Both of you. You must be.
Yeah.
I was going to say,
I am a bit, but with what Emily has to do, I just can't. I would think you were. You've got to be.
What do you do, Emily, to shake it off at the end of the evening?
Well, I get to take a shower, so that helps. I'm covered in blood at the end of the show, so I do get to wash it off and, you know, just kind of like have like crying in the shower time, as you would imagine Carrie would have if had she lived. But then I just go home and just try to mentally prepare myself to get ready to do it again the next day, you know?
But do you look forward to doing
it? Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I don't think I could ever get tired of
it. Is there the possibility that both of you or one of you or anybody in this production might go on with it if it does indeed go on?
Anything's possible. Yeah.
Have to call the producers on that one, Michael.
Well, we've got both of them here.
This is your life.
We haven't put this out here. We have to put it out. We'll get it before the end of the hour. The tickets for Carrie the Musical, priced from $40 to $70, always astounds me what you can see at these dollar amounts in Los Angeles or Los Angeles area. $40 to $70. Unbelievable. And can be purchased at La Mirada Theater's website. That's lamiradatheater.com. Theater is the R-E spelling. lamiradatheater.com. Or by calling their box office, 562-944-9801 or 714-994-6310. Student and senior discounts available. For more information on the production, visit experiencecarrie.com. And once again, we'll throw that out there in the next couple of minutes as well. But we're just about approaching that time, Michael.
We are. We have to baptize
these young ladies. We're at the time where we ask you both to share.
No water involved.
A tale.
No spilling of anything.
No
involved.
Blood. No baptism. Buckets of blood. A tale of woe, an onstage mishap, something funny or embarrassing or something during both of your careers that you could share. Missy, do you want to
start? Doesn't need to be during this show.
It's funny because when you do talkbacks, it's usually the number one question people always ask you. It's like, oh, what crazy has happened? And I feel like I can't recall anything majorly crazy or funny. You want, like, the funniest story ever. But I'm sort of I know this about myself. I forget my microphone sometimes. And I was actually in Milwaukee Rep doing a two-person show. Roger Bean, who wrote Marvelous Wonderettes, wrote Betsy Malone and I a show called Honky Tonk Laundry. Two-person show. So you can imagine, we're never off stage, ever. So I, you know, go on.
So you have 50% of the mics.
Exactly. Yeah. And I just literally have about maybe 20 seconds when I go off for a prop thing. And so and I just remember Betts laughing hysterically and, you know, seeing people while I'm doing a scene that should be on stage, I'm off stage and people are sticking their hands down my pants, you know, trying to hook me up and put a microphone on me and everything like that. So that's always horrible. And I've almost gone out before, like even in Wonderettes, Betts will look at me and go, Misty, your microphone, you know. So that's happened. It hasn't happened on this one yet.
Who was the one? It was Anna Maria Alberghetti. Wasn't it the great story of one of the first body mics used was during West Side Story? When she did, and that she took it into the restroom with her at intermission. Is that Anna Maria Alberghetti?
I don't know, but I had no idea what the first show was. But that's surprising that it was West Side Story. That's interesting.
I don't know if that's so or not. That could be an urban legend.
I know one about Betty Grable where she left it on.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of bathroom stories.
I think maybe it's Anna Maria Alberghetti, just because it's if you use a more obscure name that people might think
more. She's still alive, isn't she?
I don't know.
I think she is.
I don't know. She's young, also here.
Fragile young woman who was so beautiful and did such a great job in Carnival. That was her big debut.
I remember her from speaking of the 70s, from the Four Seasons salad dressings commercial. She would do the packet of Four Seasons, and all you needed to add was your own oil and vinegar. And it's like, really? It's a packet of Italian seasonings, and you're selling it like salad dressing. I don't know why I'm talking about this. Emily, what is your tale of woe?
Well, I have never, ever forgotten a microphone because I'm a professional. I don't know. I think probably the best story is I was doing Cinderella, Rodgers and Hammerstein Cinderella, in a beautiful outdoor theater, the Redlands Bowl in Redlands, California. And we had real horses, a real horse and carriage for when Cinderella goes to the ball. And the horse came on stage and everyone's singing, "It's possible," and everything's so magical. And the kids are just loving their life. And then everyone starts laughing hysterically. And I realized that the horse had just, like,
emptied its bowels on stage. And it just, like, continued to poop for a long while. Through, like, the whole song. And then people had to come on and, like, dance, like, tap dance and, like, sweep it off at the same time.
Oh, man.
It was amazing. There's a video of it somewhere.
I'm trying to think about...
Please digitize that. Please.
Yeah. I'm trying to think about, as a performer... This is the... Hi, casting director here. Great news. You got the role. You have a great tap number. But you're also carrying your shovel. So let me spill you in. In addition to doing the tap, coming out and just dancing and also being in charge of... You're true dancing birds. Slash sanitation. This is your role.
Pay bump.
That's priceless.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Michael, would you throw the information out here again one more time for people to catch the show?
Absolutely. Tickets for Carrie the Musical, ladies and gentlemen, as Paul said earlier, are available at the La Mirada Theater website, which is lamiradatheater.com, theater being spelled with an R-E, or by calling the La Mirada Theater box office at 562-944-9801. Or 714-994-6310. Student and senior discounts are available. And for more information on the production, visit experiencecarry.com.
And this plays through, we said, August.
April 5th.
April 5th.
April 5th.
April 5th, not that's April correct. 19th.
Or August 19th.
Yeah. August 19th?
You just said August.
Did I say August?
You did.
Did
mister.
I really?
Yes,
oh,
you
man,
did.
I'm so tired.
We're both tired today.
Yes.
We've both made some little mistakes here.
Yes.
Thank goodness for these.
You know, when we hit the ground running with the show, you know, when we got to really just sort of hit it flying, you know, it just shakes me up a bit. Yeah.
Well, get unshook because we are done.
We are done.
We are done. Thank you so much.
Ladies, what
thank
a pleasure
you.
Having both
what
of you.
Great
do
pleasure.
Either of you have websites that you can share that our listeners can check in on your creative process?
I'm working on mistycotton.com. I do own the domain name.
And it's her real name.
it is my real name.
I know it's even in her bio.
Yes, your real name. And Emily, do you have one?
I do. I cannot remember what it is, though. My cousin made it for me. You get just, I don't
always,
know. I'm on Twitter.
The self promoter.
Yeah, we're on Twitter
I'm on
and Instagram.
Media, so if anybody actually cares enough to, they can just look at
your bio.
My
bio says that you actively post on Twitter.
Yeah, I do.
Instagram.
She's hilarious, too.
Yeah.
I enjoy her posts. Yes.
Thanks.
Wonderful. Thank you both. Great having
ladies,
you
ladies, have a wonderful time doing the shows and the rest of the run.
Thank
good
you.
Luck
thank
to you,
you
beyond that.
Thanks.
April 5th. April 5th. Lee Martino, April 5th.
Lee Martino.
Lee Martino, April 5th.
Love you, Lee.
Okay. See you all next week.
Thank you, Paul.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle right here on LA Talk Radio.